You've got rookie draft burning questions. We've got penicillin. All that and more starting now.
You are now listening to the Dynasty Rewind.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dynasty Rewind. I'm your host, Michael Bauer, the best in the business. Once again, back in business, joined as always by my faithful co-host, Nate, Professor Christian. Nate, hello.
Hello. Fresh off cutting my lawn for the first time of the year. Mike, I got some patchy spots in my backyard. Do you have any strategies for fixing that?
Patchy spots?
Yeah, like lacking grass.
Yeah, there's certain types of grass. I would go for your backyard. I would get the Scotts blend, the low light blend, because you have a lot of trees. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you get that, you put some hay on top of it, and then you'll be good to go.
Easy enough, huh?
Yeah. Now they do say to plant grass in the fall before, you know, the season ends, but you don't have any animals or any kids. So there's not really going to be a lot of people back there. So you'll be good whenever you want to plant it.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate Leave it to a dad to have long care advice. Need to cut my own grass. But that being said, Nate had that question just burning in the top of his head. And you've got questions about your rookie draft. And I have fantastic news. We're here to answer all of them for you. So, Nate, let's get right into it. Let's not let people hanging. And, hey, if you want to ask questions anytime before I get into it, patreon.com/DynastyRewind. Now offering a free 7-week trial. Come in, hang out. A week free on me. Nice. We hope you stick around afterwards. Nate, what are some general strategies you have that you try to deploy in all of your rookie drafts?
Like the Baltimore Ravens, I am a value drafter. I go after best position available, best player available. That's what I'm always looking for. I understand, you know, sometimes we do have to, you know, take a look at our team and we'll talk about, you know, what happens when you need to draft for need a little bit later in this video. But the main strategy that I take into every single draft I go into is how can I maximize the value of my picks? And sometimes that is picking up the player sliding down the board. Sometimes it's also trading out of the draft and maximizing the value of your picks. So always trying to maximize that value. That is my number one strategy and number one goal, not just in my rookie drafts, but honestly in everything I do in Dynasty Fantasy Football.
Don't draft before the draft. This is going to sound weird, but, and my man Christian, he DMs me fairly often. He's got questions. We chat. I don't mean to blow you up, but he was telling me he had like his first couple rounds of the draft planned out. And that's great, you know, that you have guys in mind. But my whole thing is I don't like being like with pick, blah, blah, blah. I'm taking this player. You have to be flexible, forgive me, unlike my speech, because sometimes you don't know who's going to fall to you. You don't know who's going to trade up and around you. So you need to make sure that you're up on everyone in this class. If you just have your mind set on Brian Thomas Jr. and then somebody, you know, goes to pick ahead of you and snipes you, you might get a little frazzled and not know what to do. And that could be especially detrimental if there's a timer on your pick as well. So be open to trades for either picks or proven production. Don't forget, hey, if you don't like anybody there, trade for proven production. It's almost guaranteed to always work. And I don't seriously start planning my draft and how I think it's going to go until about a week or so before. And obviously when players have landing spots. Mm-hmm. So that's what we got. Nate, what are some mistakes you are looking to avoid in all of your rookie drafts? So this is a hard one because sometimes I've noticed things that seem like a great pick or a great move at that time. You look back a little bit while later and you're like, what was I thinking? Happens.
Yeah, it does. And something I'm going into this year and looking to improve upon and not make this mistake is I don't want to be scared to move off my picks. You know, we've been looking at, say you have a first round and, you know, as soon as the season ended, maybe you didn't make the playoffs. So you have like the 104 or something like that. You know, it's the 104. You've known it's the 104 for like 5 months now. You do have the player in your mind who you're going to pick. You have it planned out a little bit. And then maybe that player is on the board or maybe they're not. But maybe the player's on the board and then someone sends you a trade. Are you scared to move off of your pick because you've already got so emotionally invested in that player, in that pick, that you're not willing to take a good deal in a trade? You know, that's something I want to make sure that myself and everyone here, you know, we're not too emotionally invested in our picks that we're scared to move off of it for better value. You know, emotions are great. You know, they keep us connected. They, in our dynasty teams, we love to have players that we drafted and we grew and are, you know, homegrown players. It just feels better when you win with homegrown players. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you drafted the player, if you traded for him. You know, building the best team is what you need to do. So, you know, keeping our emotions out of it sometimes is really going to help us maximize that value.
The other thing I'm emotionally invested in is the payout. That's it. And if I got to move off a draft pick or whatever, because another thing that I'm trying to do is I'm trying to disregard poor draft capital and landing spots for players I like. You want to talk about emotional investment? This goes hand in hand. Hey, Kylan Hill and LaMichael Perine, please stand up. Mm-hmm. Although LaMichael Perine did bring Nate and I together, another story for another time. I have a long list of failed draft picks because of guys that I was just fiending for, I guess you could say. Sometimes players you don't like as much with good opportunity and landing spot, it's just the best way to do things. You know the guy's going to get a good opportunity. He's in a good spot. And if you really hate him that much, draft him, let him play, move him. Instead of drafting a guy that you like, overdrafting a guy you like,
yep.
Don't let emotions play into it. I agree. So, Nate, how does your strategy change in rookie drafts when you're rebuilding versus when you're contending or stuck in the middle, if at all?
Yep. When I'm rebuilding, I'm looking to really go into that drafting best player available, drafting the best value on the board. The value that I think is insulated for the future, not going to lose value quickly. You know, there's some running backs out there that, you know, you might feel really good about, but running backs we've seen, they can lose value very quickly. Quarterbacks, wide receivers usually keep their value longer. So in rebuilding teams, you know, especially the first year of the rebuild, I'm looking at quarterback. I'm looking at wide receiver. You oftentimes don't need running backs until you start competing. So, you know, that's like at the end of your rebuild. So depending on where you are in your rebuild, it might, you know, determine the position that you're targeting. But at the end of the day, you're always trying to target value, because even if you do draft a running back and you're in the first year of your rebuild, you don't have to keep that running back. You can move that running back later for more first round picks. Maybe you get two first round picks in the next year with a guy that you picked up at the 108 or something like that, you know? So trying to get the best value, and then, you know, how can I take that value and get more draft picks in the future? And maybe that's just moving off of your first round pick for a first next year and a second. Or if you have a mid first this year, maybe can I get two first next year and continue to build up my team, because I don't need immediate results. That's how I'm looking at with rebuild. With the contending team, it's the opposite. Maybe I'm looking to move up the board and get that player that I need to finish my roster out and make sure that I'm a competitive team. And I'm willing to move a 25 first, especially if I'm a competing team and I'm thinking that's late anyway. If I need to add my 25 first to the 108 to jump up to the 106, 105 and get that wide receiver that really completes my lineup, that's the move to make. So, you know, one way in the rebuilding, you're kind of trading down and trying to acquire more future draft capital. And a contending team, sometimes you're foregoing the future and you're going all in, you know, maybe a little bit earlier than we talk about sometimes, where, hey, you can hold into your first because you want to pick some up in the season. But if you get a good opportunity in the draft, you got to strike while the iron's hot.
I love that. So for me, you know, if I'm rebuilding, I'm going to draft best player available, and I'm very wide receiver quarterback heavy. Some maybe tight end. I'll probably stash some tight ends later.
Yeah, throw them in the taxi.
Yeah, exactly. But I move around the board more when I'm rebuilding too. I try to maximize my draft capital. So like if I have the 104, can I turn it into a later pick in a second and maximize what I have? And then I move off what some people would consider lesser players, like Curtis Samuel would have been that at one point in time, to try to get more capital. Guys that are a little bit older that, you know, they're not going to be around for when I'm contending. So what can I move and maximize them for now, so they're not dying out on my roster? And then, Nate, like you said, you're contending. I want that positional need and early production. It's that easy.
Yep.
All right, Nate, what players in this draft are more landing spot dependent than others?
All right. I got a nice little list here. I think we have a couple people that we have on the same, but starting out with the running backs, Blake Corum is a running back I think is going to be landing spot dependent, because I've talked about it before. Great vision. He did incredible work behind that Michigan offensive line, but that Michigan offensive line was dominant in the college football landscape. If he goes somewhere where they have a good offensive line and they're just like, hey, Blake, you take the ball, you find that hole the offensive line makes and you get the yardage, he's going to make it happen. But if that offensive line that he goes to is not top five, top 10 in the league, I think Blake Corum's really going to struggle because he hasn't, over the last couple of years, really created his own yards. He takes what's given to him, and he's really, really good at finding what the play is built for. But if the play breaks down, what is Blake Corum going to give me? I have some question marks there. So if he doesn't go to a great landing spot for that offensive line, I'm going to have worries about that. I'm another running back who's gaining some steam here recently, Tyrone Tracy Jr. He former wide receiver. He has a lot of receiving ability. You know, we've seen running backs who have receiving ability be significant in fantasy football, even without a huge role. But I want to, you know, temper the expectations a little bit with this guy. He is, you know, starting to get that hype on Twitter, but there's not necessarily that role on every single team. And he might just go somewhere where he's not going to be a actual piece of that offense and maybe just more of a developmental player. So I want to kind of, you know, take a look. If he doesn't go somewhere that's a bit more creative, probably we might have some issues with getting him onto the field early and getting any production. At the wide receiver position, one of my top most bust-worthy players, depending on the landing spot, is Keon Coleman. I like him as a big slot. I don't like him as a X receiver.
You're a big slot.
I know.
I had to, sorry.
I heard it in my head before you even said it. But if he goes inside, he's not that great of a route runner. So if he goes inside, that gives him the space to work with. He doesn't have to worry as much about creating separation. If he goes outside, I don't think he can separate that well. And if he's just leaning on that contested catchability, I don't think that's as elite as a lot of people have made it out to be. And then three other wide receivers I want to mention, Troy Franklin and Xavier Worthy. I'm kind of putting these guys in the same bucket. I think they're both incredible wide receivers. But if they go somewhere where they get pigeonholed into a deep threat role and they're not being given passes on all three levels of the field and being used on screens and just there stretching the field for the rest of that offense, I'm going to be worried about their fantasy football production. You know, say a guy like Xavier Worthy, I don't think this is really going to happen, but say he goes to like the Indianapolis Colts and fills that Alec Pierce position. He's just going to be running go routes all the time. So, you know, you got to keep in mind these players, they're really, really good. They're really, really fast. If they go somewhere where they're just going to be asked to, you know, stretch the defense, it's not always going to be really great for fantasy football. And then one other guy, Mike, I know you're a little upset with this one, Malachi Corley. I think he's going to be a guy that needs a creative offense.
Landing spot proof.
I don't know about that. I don't personally feel that way. You might. Who do you have? Who do you have that is more landing spot dependent than others?
We talked about Keon Coleman. You touched on him. Roman Wilson is another guy who I think can be pretty landing spot dependent. Michael Penix Jr., another guy too. Mm-hmm. I just have some concerns. I need Michael Penix to go somewhere where he's not starting right away. That's what I need. That imperative for me. And I think we could say all the running backs in this class are landing spot dependent because we don't have the quote-unquote proverbial generational talent. We think Jonathan Brooks is the running back one. But if Jonathan Brooks goes to the Rams, a lot of question marks there because Kyren Williams has proven what he's done. If he goes to the Texans, Joe Mixon's there. I don't think he would go to Philadelphia because they don't know how to draft running backs highly. But there's plenty of spots where he could go that it would be convoluted. And we could say the same. You talked about Blake Corum. We don't know where Bucky Irving's going to go, what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm putting all the running backs in there, to be honest with you. I hope it doesn't sound like a lazy answer, but I think that's where we're at. Nate, what landing spots are more volatile to players in this draft than dynasty managers may realize, i.e., if player slash position X goes here, I want no parts of him?
That's a pretty bold statement there. I don't think there's any players that if this player goes here, I don't want any parts of him. I'm always slightly interested at worst. But let's say the quarterback position, the Patriots. I'm less interested in that landing spot than other landing spots for quarterbacks, as well as the Broncos. I don't think that those teams have the pieces in place to really support a quarterback year one. So I think it would be a struggle and not great for their development. So I'm a little wary of those landing spots. Running back, I'm a bit wary about the Giants and the Panthers. These are bad offenses.
Yeah.
And, you know, Panthers, we saw Chuba do pretty well last year, but overall that offense did not impress me. I think they're going to take a step forward this year, but
we hope.
You know, there's also a crowded backfield there. And then the Giants, whoever they draft is not going to be Saquon Barkley. And Barkley is an incredible running back, incredible athlete. And what he's done for the Giants the last couple of years has been really impressive, because I don't think anyone else in that situation could have produced as well as he has.
No.
So that's some running back landing spots I'm not a huge fan of. And then doubling up on the Giants here at the wide receiver position, Giants and Broncos, you know, there's not a great quarterback solution there. You can throw the Patriots in here as well. You know, they might have rookies, but as a wide receiver, sure, it's open. Long-term, that's great, but early season production, I'm not sure about any of those landing spots are going to be great for any wide receiver.
Yeah, you could also add the Bears to the running back situation, because they just signed DeAndre Swift. They have Roschon Johnson. Khalil Herbert still there as well. So I actually don't like to say that there's any one destination that if a player goes to, I'm staying away from. Things change from year to year. We've seen it time and time again. There's certain players that can go to a good team that would negate their strengths. And I'll give you an example. If Taj Washington goes to Indianapolis, you know, Josh Downs is there. They're somewhat of a similar player. I don't think you get much playing time. So on the flip side, also be aware of what we're, you know, calling the good offensive bump. And I'll give you an example. Remember when Mecole Hardman, we talked about this, went to Kansas City? People were bumping him like crazy. Tyreek Hill had gotten potentially suspended, and then they drafted Mecole Hardman. There's your Tyreek Hill replacement. So be wary of the offense bump. But that being said, some offenses I'm wary of include the Patriots, the Broncos, the Giants, the Titans, and the Saints. So. So much of our focus here is protecting our assets in Dynasty, keeping the long-term vision in mind. Aura reflects this mindset with the most important assets in your life. Have you ever received a spam call or suspicious email? It's not just annoying, it's a sign of a much larger problem. Behind these unwanted communications are data brokers, websites that buy and sell your personal information without your consent. I recently did a search for my own name online and was shocked to find my information plastered across multiple data broker sites. That's when I realized just how vulnerable my online presence really was. Enter Aura. They're more than just an online security service. They're your personal bodyguard in the digital world. Aura actively identifies which data brokers are selling your info and takes swift action by sending opt-out requests on your behalf. Not only does this cut down on spam, but it also shields you and your loved ones from potential cyber threats and hackers. Think about it. Your address, email, health records, even details about your family are all out there for anyone to exploit. But Aura doesn't just stop at protection. They offer unparalleled convenience, too. With their comprehensive suite of tools, including antivirus, VPN, password management, and identity theft insurance, you can safeguard your online presence with ease from the app on your phone or desktop. It's like locking all your doors with one key. I've made the choice to take my online privacy seriously, and with Aura by my side, I have the peace of mind to focus on what truly matters. If you value your privacy as much as I do, don't wait any longer. Check out Aura today and take control of your online presence. Go to aura.com/dynastyrewind to start your 2-week free trial on us. The link will be in the description of this podcast. Don't wait. Protect yourself today. All right, so Nate, welcome back again. How do you address need in your rookie drafts when need isn't the best option on the board? Is there any point where need is greater than best player available? And I will tell you, if that's an issue, get a roster review.
Oh, yeah. Roster review is always good. If we really feel like we need to go after the player that is our need versus the best player available, like I said before, I always like going best player available, because then the more valuable player, maybe we can move it for a different player in that same position that we need. It's a roundabout way, but it's still going to improve your team. But if we do need to go after that need, can we trade down? And obviously this is, you know, a little risky, because you don't want to lose that player. So I'm not saying, you know, trade down like five spots, like I'm going to pick that guy at five spots later. Can you trade down one or two spots, get a third round pick if it's like in the second round, if it's in the first round, you know, a second, just to let the person that's behind you get the more valuable player. You still get the guy that you want. You pick up a little bit of additional draft capital in the meantime. That's what I would be doing. If there's someone on the board I really know that I need for my team, but really isn't quite close to ADP at this point, you know, how can I maximize the value of my pick, still get that player later, and get something on top of it?
So for me, I look to make a move, honestly. And is it either me moving up or down in the draft, or can I trade for a proven player with what I have and with ever, I guess we could say it, extra resources I have, or am I heavy at the wide receiver position? I need a running back. Can I use whatever capital I have, draft capital, and those extra wide receivers to make a move or something like that? That's what I typically do. But like Nate said, if the ADP is not, you know, if the vibes for the ADP aren't there, you gotta make a move or do something. So yeah. This next one is tough. What pick range are you trying to trade into? What pick range are you trying to trade out of? And how are you doing this, excluding the top 8 picks?
Yeah, like money in the banana stand, there is always value in the late second round of rookie drafts, Mike.
What does that even mean?
Arrested Development. If you haven't watched it, you wouldn't know. But I know there's always money in the banana
stand. I know something about boats and water, and that's it.
Yeah, there you go. The late second round, there's always value. Look at last year. You could have drafted Josh Downs, Marvin Mims, Jaden Reed. There's always some running backs that fall into the late second, depending on, you know, which ones depend on your league exactly. But there's always some, you know, late day two, early day three running backs that fall into the second, late second, that you can pick up and end up having some opportunity. And people don't value late seconds as much as they should. You know, once they see it get past like the 206, a lot of people are usually out on their second round picks and they're willing to move them. So, you know, I'm trying to take advantage of that spot right there. And, you know, sometimes that's even the early third. I think there's always value, especially at this point with how we've seen rookies come into the league. You know, there's a lot more churn. You know, the teams aren't waiting 3 years for a player to break out. So, you know, they're giving opportunities to players their rookie year. So these players, we're seeing opportunity for them, you know, in the top 30. So if I can get into that top 30, the late second, the early third, I think there's players there that I value. And I can move off of veteran players. And, you know, for those picks, I can move off of future draft capital for those picks. You know, if it's a early third or a late second, I can move, if I'm a contending team, my 25 second, maybe two thirds together, something like that, or a bench player in a third, bench player in a fourth or something like that. You know, those are pretty accessible picks for the value that you're going to get out of them.
Okay. I love the late second, like Nate said, for those reasons. And I love the third round as well. Sometimes you have guys that, you know, they may not be like studs or anything like that, but they can end up being solid contributors or good guys to move later. I also love when people say all the rest of my picks on the block message, you know, it's like the fourth, fifth round, if I have the taxi space, and that's a big if. And for me, there's not really any pick range I'm trying to trade out of. That is a situational thing depending on how my team is, my roster looks, and how the draft is going. So I really, that one I can't answer, because
I will say, Mike, if you have a taxi space, I will always trade a future fifth for a fifth this year in the late fifth. Like, it's like the 5-10, you could probably, almost anyone's going to be like, well, yeah, I'll take your 25 fifth for my 5-10. There's a good chance like it's a better pick, and I don't like anyone on the board at this point. I'll probably cut them. So if you have the taxi space, don't worry about the waiver. Trade your future fifth for the for like the 5-10, and then next year do the same thing. You just always have fifths later that you can.
And people, they get to a point where they just don't, they don't want to draft anymore because they don't care about these guys at the bottom of the draft. They've gotten the guys that they wanted. They've made their moves, and they're just done with the draft at that point. They want to go about their lives, and that's fine. So use that time to get some nice stash candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so our next question here is, how does your strategy change, if at all, when you have an abundance of picks in a rookie draft, i.e. more picks than what you're given? I'm assuming what you're given space for on your roster is what that is implying. I look to package them up to move up or to trade for proven commodities. Guys and gals, don't forget to trade for proven assets. If you have a lot of picks here, you know what I mean? And you could trade, you need a quarterback, like trade for Kirk Cousins. I would like to say trade for Jared Goff, but you can't do that anymore. Trade for proven commodities. That's the time to do it, Nate.
Yeah, like you said, trying to get future draft capital, because if I have too many picks, I've already kind of done the math. There's no reason to draft players just to cut them, you know? So if I can get future draft capital, whether it's just trading, like I said earlier, with like the 5-10 for a future fifth, I get the 3-10. I'll just take a future third at that point, because I can work something with that. Even if I don't use that pick as a pick to actually draft somebody, I can use that third to put onto a trade package later and make something happen. So, you know, I always am fine with kicking down the can down the road if I have too much draft capital.
Yeah, me too. At what point in each round are you willing to trade out for a future pick in the same round straight up?
Oh, I just answered that.
Yeah, this is another, but it's situationally dependent for me. Yeah. That's one that you got to go and you see, I have to see how the draft is going. You can't. And that's one of those things where I said, don't draft before the draft. Don't trade before the draft either when you're looking to trade out for next year until you see how the draft is going a little bit.
Yeah, I don't like to do this straight up in the first or second round. I think if you're at like the 211, 112 or something like that, I'm not really moving out for just a straight up future first at that point. Though when you're at the 12 spot and you're looking at the other team, if you think that there's a pretty good chance that they're not a competing team, it's definitely a move worth making. But yeah, most of the time, you know, I want something on top of it, whether it's just like a bench player that I prefer, maybe a bench swap, or just like a mid-round, late-round pick that I get on top of it just to kind of sweeten that deal for myself. Maybe it's just a move like from my late third to a mid-third, and I get, you know, a 25 first and I move out of the 112, something like that. But definitely at the end of the rounds, especially in like the third, fourth, fifth, I'm willing to take up, you know, just a straight swap for the next year.
Perfect. Last one. What is the best way to consolidate picks and assets pre-draft or mid-draft if you have too many, i.e. more than roster and taxi will allow post-draft? So see what lower tier player you could bundle up with a pick or two, move up in the draft, you know, take those lower picks and just get up. Do we need to trade out of the draft? Is your team in a spot where it's very good? Trade out, again, proven commodities, picks for next year. Assess where your team is at before you do anything. That's going to help you decide what direction to go in. Compare it versus the other teams in the league. And hey, if you're really not sure where your team's at, what to do, payhip.com/DynastyRewind. Get a roster review. The link's going to be in the description of both this podcast and any YouTube videos that we do. Nate, anything to add to that before we head on out for the evening?
Yeah, you know, you talk about consolidating picks and our mind goes to, you know, how can we take, you know, two first and get like a late first or something. I mean, 2 seconds to get like a late first, something like that. Well, how about taking 2 early seconds and going after Nico Collins? You know, because you're looking at that as, hey, I have 2 players I'm going to draft. I don't have enough room for that. Well, before the draft, can you just go get a player and just make that a 2-for-1? Or do you take one of those picks and you add it on top of another player and upgrade? You know, I love taking a draft pick, especially, you know, in this year's draft, like outside of the top 8. If I can take a draft pick and upgrade one of my players and feel really good about it, I'm always willing to do that as long as I have the depth of my team already, because that's how you continue to improve your team. Because picking a player, it's great, but it's also risky. And if you already have a pretty good team, then it's usually worth it to just go ahead and upgrade your starters, upgrade your bench players, you know, make that team stronger at the top.
Okay. I love it. So that's going to be all of it. All of it. It's going to be all for us tonight, everybody. Thank you for checking us out. And until next time, for Nate and Mike, thanks for listening. We'll see you in a few days. All right, everyone, that is going to do it for us this week. But if you're headed to a game, make sure you check out SeatGeek.com. It's your one-stop shop for all things live events. It offers the best price available. Use the promo code DynastyRewind. You'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Don't forget, if you want to play some best ball, head on over to Underdog. It's the easiest buy-in in fantasy football. And it's not having to worry about setting your lineups, man. That's what it's all about. So again, underdog.com. Use the promo code REWIND. A 100% match on your first deposit up to $100. Visit our store over at payhip.com/DynastyRewind. That's where you find our roster reviews. That's where you find all of our manuals and everything like that. Head on over there now. Grab some merch at spreadshop.com. Link is down below. And we want to see you in our community. And that is patreon.com/DynastyRewind. But till next time, everybody, for my faithful co-hosts, Chev Nooney and Nate Christian, I'm your host, Michael Bauer. Be kind, please rewind. Thank you for listening.